This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Sieberg. Good morning, Robert. Good morning, afternoon, evening to wherever you are, dear listener.
Yes, dear listeners, this is the last episode before the summer break, but don't worry, as always, we have a surprise for you in the next weeks, and today there's another whole episode, Peter.
We just said, yeah, because I already came, well, I wasn't, I mean, in my case, it's not really, I don't know what holiday is, as you, we're both, you know, in charge of our own activities, so we're not kind of forced to go into, it always depends a little bit with many people on if they have kids or not, right?
Yeah.
But my feeling is that we, at least where we are, we're based in Bavaria, right?
Yes.
Both you and I, and they always go latest. Within Germany, actually, when I was on the motorways down south, up north again, I believe that already other parts of Germany have already again started working. So some of you listeners, you know, I only know at this in this case for the German situation, but some already started working, right?
Yeah, kudos to Fabian Bause. He's back in the office, I think. Yeah.
Oh, you know specifically.
Yeah, it's in North Rhine-Westphalia, and I think they are back on track. Yeah.
Yeah, same with the Italian people. The motorways were full with Italian people, yeah. Actually, which we were not sure if they came back or still need to start their holidays.
Peter, let's start. Peter, I don't have any AI news today.
You don't?
Yeah, but I have a reading tip for the summer.
You want to close with that maybe? Let me...
Yeah, we will close with that.
Yeah, I don't have anything big. Two, three thoughts maybe that you and I can just chat a bit about. There was this thought from Andre Carpati, and it's a couple of weeks old already. Maybe we already talked about it, I don't know, but it came across what I was doing, and he was talking somewhere at a conference, and what he talks about is the large language model operating system, right? So he says it's going to be a new computing paradigm with large language models acting like CPUs. Using tokens instead of bytes. That's I think that's almost, for me, that's the core, which I think is very interesting, the thing with the CPUs. Well, we talk about it, it's still the quote-unquote, and having a context window instead of RAM, that's, of course, in combination with what he just mentioned, very interesting. And then he calls that the large language model OS, LLMOS or LMOS. Now, I had a couple of thoughts there. Maybe we just want to chat about it. Because actually, where I went to a couple of places to see what people were thinking. In general, it wasn't where I was. It wasn't accepted very, very well. It's more like, not always in a very nice way, Andre should stop smoking and stuff like that. It was brought in combination with, you know, he's been saying, you know, English language. Was it him? Was it me? Was it other people? Doesn't matter. Being the new programming language, which the reason I put it like this as a modest person is because, of course, I've been saying this for a long time as well. So maybe I was in the areas where, you know, people don't like to see changes. And of course, you can't. And the LLM is, although it's going to be central, and then the other thought is, of course, GenAI, and then I'll leave it up to you maybe to comment. Of course, you're always going to need some kind of CPU, or is it what you've been looking into, quantum? But you're going to need some piece of something to drive things, I believe, right? So LLM is more like a software piece on top of it.
Let me comment on GenAI systems, as you mentioned, because it's a crucial part, I think. And do you remember the episode with Jakob? And he asked the question, who will build the Simulink for GenAI systems? And
all right.
Last week, we got the answer because AWS presented an app editor or something like that, an app programming editor with low code. And Jakob shared the video to the presentation. And yeah, AWS is the first company who builds a Gen AI system out of it. It's very, very interesting. But what is your opinion
Or it's almost like a Gen AI system builder, right?
Yeah,
because exactly. you made the reference, not sure inside of the one that you did, but you made the reference at that time to Simulink, I believe, for example. So it's more like the, let's say, the programming environment, making sure that everything works together, kind
exactly.
of.
Exactly.
And that's what they came out with. And then, yeah, and because that was the other thought I had as well, you know, Genesis. By the way, I looked at it this morning, and there's a company that exists with exactly this term since 2023. It's actually in Dubai, I think. So those of you listeners who are maybe part of this Gen AI Sys, we're not talking about you, although I believe you are doing something very similar, but we're talking about the paper that Jakub put out. And of course, Jakub is saying something similar, but maybe very different. We would need to ask him, because he says, you know, the Gen AI Sys uses natural language as communication. There's these I/O interfaces equipped with databases, and you know there's a lot of overlap. He calls it then. Well, I'm not sure if it was his term, the Genesis, but as I said, it's more like I think certain people see what is. I like these ideas. Now, if it's going to be exactly like that, I think I hope that the value for you, listener, is that if we bring these things up or we chat about it, Robert and I, that you think, oh yeah, this is a good idea, it's a bad idea or whatever. But I mean, most of you, your job is to, you know, to develop things or to look into, you know, the next couple of years as far as we can, right? And you want to develop your new machine, your new production plant, whatever it is that you're doing, or on a different level, and looking into this direction, I think it's a very useful thing considering.
Exactly. What else do you have, Peter?
Well, one that came very close, actually, is where, of course, you can't. There is no day go by without Jensen Huang saying something smart. At this time, he was at SIGGRAPH 2024. For those of you that do not, it brings me back, actually, to, again, probably more than 30 years ago. Must have been one of my first visits to the Valley, Silicon Valley. John Petty Associates. John, not sure that you're still doing your thing there. And I was with Seiko. So this time I'm not saying I was with...
Yeah, it was the first GPU I
with this one company. but Seiko Instruments, you know, they had these... Well, they had monitors, very high quality monitors, Seiko Epson, Seiko Instruments, and they also had this printing. And that's why we were very strongly close related to graphics, and that's why I was there. And of course, Jensen did a couple of things there. Number one, he announced this inference as a service for industrial AI solutions in relation with or with a Hugging Face. You know, I don't know more. I haven't seen more than it. Then, you know, it should help developers. So many of you listeners bring generative AI capabilities to industrial sectors, manufacturing, robotics, you know, new microservices. That's all. Have you read, seen more about it?
No, I was concentrated on the stock market last 2 days.
Oh, selling your stock or what?
Selling everything.
Oh, so it was you. You were in charge of everything.
Yeah, Warren and myself, Peter.
Yeah, maybe every now and then we need to share with our listeners if we do or do not own stock. So you just say you sold everything. I'm still holding on. It's the final quote I have here is also, of course, and that's someone that I believe kind of everybody probably likes again from Jensen, is everybody will have an AI assistant. That's what I'm completely convinced of. You know, there was this development, what was the telephone, but the Spain conference, Barcelona, beginning of the year.
It's the Mobile World Congress or something.
Exactly. Again, where it was many, many years ago. And there was one, I'm not sure the name of that company. I wasn't going to talk about that at all. But they went together with Telecom, I think, and they have been saying, you know, the user interface or the idea of apps is going to be gone. And I must say, I very much like that idea. No, really, this idea. And that's how I start using my mobile phone more and more all the time when I have a question. I go to either, it doesn't matter. In this case, it's a Google Pixel. I do have one stock, I believe, of Google, just so we start sharing that with our listeners.
Sell everything. And
it has done best of all of them because okay. I have it for a little bit of a longer time. But I think independent of it, I just, whatever I do want to interact and want to learn, you know, bring me, tell me, what is this, what is that, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100 times a day, I just say, okay, Google, there it is. And I say, and I get my answer. Or I do it the same thing with, for example, ChatGPT. The user interface is not at the same level, but that's because of the platform, maybe, right? But I do like this idea very, very much that I do not have to go and search in a specific app. I think it's all about the levels. Maybe that's the final, the thing that brings it all together in our final discussion here. It's the same with Meta. Why is Meta doing what they're doing? Then we have Apple and Google and you have Windows. And then when you go a level higher, when you sit on top even of apps, then again, the apps need to make sure that they're going to find a way of, you know, monetization. So I do believe this idea. And I didn't go into the details of what Jensen said, but I do very, very strongly believe that all of us, one way or the other, probably for the next couple of years, it is going to be the smartphone. Is it ever going to change? Not a company with the thing that you wear on in front of you or whatever it's going to be. But this idea that we're all going to have one or many, many different assistants or just one that is just there for you.
But you have now forgotten Jensen's statement, right? It's inference as a service.
No, they were actually two, yeah, right. So that was the one that I didn't read more about, and actually we should, and I do want to go, but I didn't see that there was more. I also went to the NVIDIA press page, and I'm not sure, but I didn't see, maybe we want to share it into the podcast notes for you, the listener, to go and have a look. But for the moment, I do not know more about it than exactly that. They want to... That NVIDIA is, of course, very strong, very widely, but also specifically very strong in the industrial AI space. And that was one. And the second one was his quote where he says, you know, everybody's going to have an AI assistant. And that was two, I would say, that were very much welcomed. I didn't hear anybody say that's nonsense. Well, the other two, they were a little bit more... Well, say, you know, not that strongly liked where I was looking. So
perfect. As I mentioned at the beginning, I have a reading tip for the summer, and it has nothing to do with AI. Maybe a bit, because Elizabeth Heider is doing research on AI at Microsoft Research in Amsterdam. She's a former colleague of Johannes Brandstätter, but she is also an author. And the New York Times devoted an entire article to her first work. That's really surprising. And the title is May the Wolf Die. And it's a crime thriller. It's set in Naples. And I've already started reading it. And one of the most beautiful descriptions at the beginning, I have a quote. From the water, Naples looked like a wedding cake that either... a very drunk or a very enthusiastic baker has created. And anyone who has ever been to Naples will be able to confirm that. Have you ever been to Naples?
Yes, I have been. It's,
and can you confirm that?
Oh, it's too long time ago. I'm not sure. What I do recall when I hear Naples, I think at the time was there. Oh, that's many years ago. Whatever Peter says is always many years ago. Now, there was a strike. There was a strike going on.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. For sure.
Is that 10 years ago? Something like that. And that was not too nice. We're not going to say bad things about Naples. So Naples, wonderful. And it's the place close to the Vesuv, is that how
exactly.
We call it? And for that reason, it's close to Pompeii. The world knows about Pompeii. Very, very impressive, right? How you walk around Pompeii and really can almost see and feel. I believe at that time I was still stronger into architecture, and you walk around these rooms and you see all this Roman, Italian culture. Wonderful. Yeah, I saw that she read this book here.
Yeah, I highly recommend. It's a very interesting book. You are not so much into fiction, right, Peter? But you should try it.
I can't concentrate anymore. I'm very
honest. Oh, Peter.
Yeah, it's so bad. It's so bad. I start reading, and in the middle of the first page, I think,
you have to record
an episode again. I need to do something else. No, I'm very much convinced. I'm not sure if one of you, the listeners, have the same thing. Potential or problem, whatever we call it. But I must say, and you are in the same mode as I am, maybe, you know, double or triple. So it's very good that you still can, you know, sit down or read a book, because most of us, you know, especially we with our type of job, we spend so much time on LinkedIn, you know, or you and I don't, on X, on Facebook, I don't know, wherever all of you, dear listeners, spend time social media. And we just scan these messages, and sometimes we click and sometimes we react. And it's, I don't know, it's very difficult to. I'll do my very best, Robert, I promise.
Yeah, do your very best. Read a book, enjoy the summer break, and May the Wolf Die, highly recommend.
Okay, looking forward to.
In the main section, Yusef from the USA is waiting. You did an interview with him. Give us two sentences.
Yeah, well, it's about Gen AI, most certainly transforming data into action. Yusef, yeah, we missed each other at this Connected Plant conference in Houston.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, that was weird. And then he came back to me a week later and said he's working on this transformative Gen AI product, working with top 10 tier manufacturers. And what is interesting, I didn't listen back to it myself, but it's like, you know, 5 minutes into the interview, I'm flabbergasted what he's talking about, because he's talking about, you know, we don't just base our decision-making on machine learning, on Gen AI, but they have already these agents.
Really?
Agents. Oh, yeah, that's so weird, right? And then I'm just going to stop, because when we just said we're all going to have our own, what was the quote? AI agents or AI assistants. Now, they have exactly those very specific agents. So he talked about NOx levels in a plant somewhere, and they cannot be higher than a certain level. And then what they use is an agent that knows everything about NOx, right? So if the machine learning is making a certain suggestion, then it's going to go through the agent, and the agent, which could, of course, because we call these humans also agents, they could theoretically be humans, right? But if we don't have them, because, you know, because we don't have people, not that many people, or we lack people, then they ask the algorithmic agent, does this make sense? And only then, after it's been confirmed, you know, the final proposal or decision is being made. So, yeah, I think it's very interesting what they're doing, just a step forward, more than what I thought I was actually going to hear. So have a listen. Enjoy.
Peter, that's it. Enjoy your summer break. Thank you very much. And you will hear us again in the first week of September. And then we have a very interesting episode around noise and sound. I'm really looking forward to this episode. We will have strange sounds in the podcast, I think.
Yeah,
Peter, that's it.
In between, are we going to have some more sounds as well or not?
Do not worry. As always, we have a surprise for our listeners.
Very good.
Thank you. Peter.
Robert, thank you. Have a good holiday. We'll talk again in a couple of weeks. Dear listener, have a wonderful holiday, or if you had already, good luck. Welcome back to your offices.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Today, I'm going to be talking to Yusef Mohasab about Gen AI transforming data into action. Hello, Yusef.
Hello, Peter. It's a true honor to be with you.
Oh, likewise. Thank you. Please, let's start with you telling our listeners who you are and what you do.
So I'm Yusef Mohasab, co-founder and CEO of Facilis.ai. We are a startup based out of Ann Arbor and soon moving to Silicon Valley. We provide, we're working day and night to transform manufacturing analytics and trivialize it. That's basically our mission. And we provide a multi-agentic platform that helps manufacturers seamlessly transform their various types of data, tabular data from their IoT sensors and domain knowledge and SOPs and manuals and images and videos and audio into actions in minutes, if not seconds.
Mm-hmm. Did I hear the word? I'm not sure I've ever heard it before, but that's because I'm not a native speaker. That you say trivialize, does that mean making things easier? Would that be what trivializing means?
Super simple, yes. Yeah.
Okay, very good. I'm sure we're going to be talking about that. It's a topic, right? It probably is in the direction of what I've been saying is, you know, making things available for domain experts rather than for experts like data scientists, etc. But I guess we'll get there. You contacted me, told me you are currently working on a quote-unquote transformative Gen AI product working with top 10-tier manufacturers. So you already kind of gave an introduction. You talk about data into actions. What actually is then your, let's say, your USP? What sets you apart from maybe other providers that do something similar?
So number one differentiator for us, Peter, is we, you know, that comes from, you know, background. So my entire career is in manufacturing analytics. And what I found was every vendor in the market, they give us a tool that creates statistical-based insights at the end, right? You run a machine learning model, you get insights. And we all know correlations are not necessarily causational, right? So the first thing that we actually took care of using our multi-agentic architecture is whenever you get an insight, it's a blend. I would say even the proper term we use is a marriage between statistical insights that come out of the machine learning and the AI model and the domain knowledge. Take an example. If I ask a question around, you know, my NOx is getting out of limits, the platform is going to run, is going to call multiple agents in the back end. One of them will do the, pulling the data, you know, curating it and cleaning it, and then run a correlation algorithm and then get the correlation results. And it will not stop here. It will actually consult with a combustion subject matter expert, we call them. It's a combustion agent that knows enough about combustion to combine the correlation results that you get from the machine learning model and give an actionable, a set of actionable insights that you can act upon that are based on the statistical correlations as well as the physics and the chemistry of combustion. So you'll never run into the contradictory correlation findings, like if you increase the flame core temperature, for example, you know, NOx is going to go down, because sometimes it depends on what data sample you look at. If you just run pass this problem to a data scientist and he runs a correlation analysis on it, you might run into those, weird findings that are not really meaningful in the physical world, right? So that's a big differentiator that we took care of.
Let me just jump in here. As you mentioned the term NOx, immediately a light in my brain goes on, because we communicated about that very topic that I believe I read on your website, but that was a couple of weeks after I must honestly say that I'm not sure where I got the example from, or it just came from my own brain, because you and I, we were both at the Connected Plan conference in Houston, right? But we missed each other. I forgot to mention that at the beginning. And that's where I did actually two presentations, and at least one of them, I was looking into this topic of towards autonomous plans, and that's where I was giving exactly that example. Now, is that a correlation? It's certainly not a causation, I think. But let me ask you specifically, you mentioned the term agent. You know, again, it's a language thing. Did you mean the algorithmic agent, or is that what you meant?
Yeah, first of all, the connected plan, that was an amazing coincidence, because I looked at your slides after the event and I was like, wow, what a coincidence.
Yeah, exactly.
We haven't connected before, but that's good. That's
yeah, yeah, it is. I mean, we're talking the same direction here. Yeah.
Yep.
Right. So you didn't mean that, and you talked about combining or marrying the machine learning based outcomes and providing them towards an agent. And I understand that is an algorithmic agent in this case, right?
So what we mean by it, if I really define an agent, very simply, it is a sequence of steps that automates a task. And the reason why you need to have multiple agents and then orchestrate the actions they take is that you can never have one size that fits all. So you have, an agent that is an algorithmic agent, and then you have an agent that is basically an LLM-based agent that really acts as a knowledge base. You might have another agent that, does other actions, traditional software engineering steps and connections and whatnot. So, but at the end of the day, it's a way, an elegant way to say automating multitasks. And dividing them into subgroups that can be orchestrated together. That's what an agent.
Okay, I think I understand that. And yes, when I was still working, that's 6-7 years ago for a company, and I learned from my colleague Albert, who was the distinguished scientist, and he was always telling us, and now everyone, correlation is not the same as causation. We were always shouting, yes, everybody knows. Now, I understand that you want to make sure, and that is, you see, is one of your differentiators, or the differentiator, that whatever is going to result out of your machine learning-based analytics is going to be at least some kind of correlation. I guess it doesn't always have to be a causation, but at least it's going to make sense, because an agent is going to check what it is that comes out of your analytics, right?
Exactly. And Peter, if I were to sum up the platform that we've built, and it's in the hands of customers right now, we basically think of it as a data engineer plus a data scientist, plus an MLOps engineer, plus a subject matter expert, all in one platform available to the user to basically query and interrogate data and get to actions in minutes rather than seconds. So I want to elaborate a little bit on this one and why actually it existed. So in my previous career, I was, recently, that was my last corporate job before starting Facilis. I was working for Coke Industries. And I had a big team of smart data engineers, data scientists, MLOps engineers, and other IT supporting roles. I had process engineers and whatnot. We traditionally solve problems by, hey, somebody discovers the problem at the plant, passes it to one of our corporate team members, and then the process starts. Right. The time we were, I would say labeling ourselves as very effective, and we were. It would take us, the fastest we could get to 4 weeks, and sometimes 6 weeks, 8 weeks to get to an insight. In manufacturing, we all know that it's not sustainable. Nobody's going to wait for you to come back with an insight. They would default to their good old days tool. They would just extract some data using whatever tool they have available and get it from the HMI, SCADA, and whatnot, and then running it in Excel. And then do whatever they can, or, Minitab or whatever statistical package they have. And then make a decision quickly, hopefully within the hour or within the shift, depending on the criticality of the problem. And then they act, right? And then whether you deliver to them the most perfect decision 6 weeks later, it's likely less relevant, right? They can learn from it, yes, probably, but it's not sustainable. So we wanted to eliminate that middle layer. We don't want those smart SMEs on the floor that they need to make decisions, process SMEs, real time, and realize the value of the massive amounts of data we are collecting using IoT platforms. And we want them to access that data seamlessly. And not only the data and analytics. So they have access to most advanced machine learning algorithms, and optimization algorithms at their fingertips. So they can run them without having to spell the word algorithm, right? They don't need to know much about data engineering or data science. That's basically, in a nutshell, what that platform is.
Yeah, they may even not need to be interested in analytics as such. I mean, that's already kind of, but we'll talk about that. I assume that they are maybe asking for help, kind of, you know, I run into a problem, you know, push a button, help me. And if in the background that is called analytics or whatever that is called, I'm not sure if I'm correct here. But tell me then, who is it for? Who is your target audience? So who is kind of triggering your, what is it, platform, your solution?
Yes, that's a very good question. So we're designed for literally for everybody from the ground up to be fair. So from, you know, operators, technicians on the floor, process engineers, controls engineers, industrial engineers, you name it. So operations managers, directors, even up to the VP level, depending on whatever insights they need, we can provide that. So it's built for technically for everybody, right? It's an intuitive interface. Again, that is meant to eliminate that barrier and the technical debt to access data and insights, right? And even in our, you know, in our mission, we say, and you must have heard this from, you know, other vendors as well, democratizing manufacturing analytics.
That was the word I was looking for at the very beginning. I didn't come to me straight away.
Yeah.
When you talked about trivialization, right?
Exactly. So we do this intentionally by offering unlimited number of user seats. When, you know, any customer buys our platform, they technically get unlimited users. We're not selling by the seat, because we believe that in order to transform manufacturing analytics and really, you know, get to Industry 4.0, and I believe we're still living in 3.5. We need to give these tools to everybody so that their decisions are data-driven decisions rather than experience-based or gut-feeling, even worse, decisions that folks make on the front line.
Okay, so tell us a bit more maybe about the features of your offering. What are a couple of other things that you want to share with us?
Yeah. So, you know, our platforms, if we really zoom out in process industry and even continuous or discrete manufacturing in general, even, you know, everybody wants to see it. So we have six modules in the platform: visualize, analyze, optimize, troubleshoot, consult, and auto troubleshoot. And if you really look at this, as everybody wants to see, you know, and compare across trends across assets and across plants and promote that in-network learning. So if I have a plant, I have a multi-plant in my company running a similar process or same, in fact, people would like to know, who is the top performer so that I can learn from. So you invoke that by just visualize across the entire.
That depends a little bit on who it is, right? So the person on the shop floor has a problem, and probably is going to go for the latter if I understood, like, you know, auto solution, how you call it. But the managing director or, you know, the person in charge of a several number of factories. So does that mean they have a different view, or anyone can choose any option?
Yeah, I love that. So we have user profiles. So if you actually log in, you can divide it this way. So you have the landing page, you'll have your ad hoc analytics interface, which is a chat interface. You can switch to wizard if you like. But then we have the dashboard interface. And that one, Peter, to your point, is tailored for a user or a group of users. So they don't get lost, right? So they get to the targeted insights that they care about.
Okay, I was going to talk about, you kind of overwhelmed me at the beginning there, because I hadn't seen anything about the agents. Now, maybe that's, you do that on purpose, or maybe I didn't read it, or maybe you don't want to talk. Actually, I do recall that you don't talk too much at all about, I don't think I've seen a single time artificial intelligence, and also not agents, but I still want to talk about it now. But as I'm at the topic, is that correct? And is it like, you know, because your users are not interested in those tools, so to say, you know, they want to know from you how you can help to do things?
I would say, Peter, I mean, your feeling is right. I mean, forget about the hype for a second. So we, you know, we started building the platform before the hype, before ChatGPT was released, right? We added the LLM and you know, later to increase the convenience and whatnot. But what we had in the platform from day one is we wanted to have an expandable architecture, right? So that, you know, we're not really locked in to a few use cases and then everybody has to, you know, wait for us to release an update 3 years later, right? So we wanted it to be sort of like Legos, if you want, like he can building blocks. That's what the agents is. The agent, so agentic architecture is, it sounds like a modern novel term or a recent term. And it's usually tied to LLMs, but it's actually, it's not that new actually. So it has been floating around for a while.
Right. Well, maybe if we can stay with that very specific term, agentic. I think it was actually Andrew Wang. Not sure you read his newsletter, his weekly. I think he had a discussion only a couple of weeks ago. So when I said you overwhelmed me at the beginning, now LLMs, maybe we may be beyond the top of the hype cycle of LLMs. You know, we're probably going down the slope, but agentic, and I want to stay with that, for me is like, you know, and I would agree with you that agents as such are not new. So I'm going to ask you, because actually Andrew was suggesting, I think he preferred the terminology agentic, which for me sounds weird, almost like artificial, unintended. So I would believe that in the future, you know, we're in the next couple of months, weeks, maybe years ever, you know, because everybody understands. Although I had to ask for, you know, we have human agents like service agents or whatever, and then we're going to have these algorithmic agents. But you do prefer also then to make a difference, this term agentic, rather than talking, well, you did it in the beginning, talk about agents as well. Is it the same for you?
So, you know, I would say they're kind of like, to us, a little bit of interchangeable. But when we emphasize agentic architecture, we mean that it will continue to be like this. And then in our vision is in even 12 months, our end users can create their own agents that will fit into that mesh, agentic mesh, if you wish. And maybe you would lean towards agentic. But at the end of the day, I mean, agent-based is agentic at the end. So I would believe. And that's our convention.
Just a term I need to get used to. But maybe after I've heard it 100 times, it's going to be normal for me as well.
Yes.
Normal as hearing about agents. But then, as you say, you started developing, designing before the hype. Yeah, and we have had, you know, agents, you know, before. I mean, agents for me have been always very strongly related to, for example, reinforcement learning, right?
Yeah, yes.
But even before then, because I'm not that type of, let's say, scientist so they may have been there even before. Now, one completely different question, maybe. Somewhere I did see that you say Facilis aims to remove 4 out of the 5 barriers to AI adoption as identified by Gartner, as we just talked about the hype cycle. Let's talk one more time about Gartner. So if you say 4 out of 5, maybe you want to share those with us. And of course, we're then also very interested in the one that you are not removing.
Actually, when we say 4 out of the 5, that was a survey that
included
600 you know, enterprises.
All right, okay.
And I guess, but I'm happy to walk you through the findings.
If they're interesting, yeah, sure.
Yeah, they're basically, in a nutshell, you know, data, data, data. So data size, complexity, access, lack of skills, and the end users, they're not, you know, data engineers, data scientists. And basically, and the cleanliness of the data and whatnot, we were just, you know, being really honest to the survey. And we said 4 out of the 5. That doesn't mean we're missing on the fifth one. It's basically sort of like irrelevant to any metric. It was a broader survey.
I understand. So maybe the fifth one was a little bit less than the very high score of the other ones.
Yeah, and we wanted to, yeah, we were just comparing to that one, Peter. So again, we just kept it really, you know, clear. We're looking at this report. But if you look at the Industrial Leadership Council survey, which was basically just surveying 250 industrial analytics executives and asking them on what are the problems, what are the hurdles to implement AI, you can basically see from that report. It's a very thorough report. I would encourage everybody to look at, and I have it in one of our decks. It's emphasizing that data is complex. It is really big data. IoT sensors are getting cheaper by the day, and everybody's deploying them left and right. 5 years ago, if you've noticed the trend, vibration sensors used to be wired and powered over Ethernet at most. But it's a physical sensor that has a lot of, you know, wiring and configuration and setting up, to the extent that it took us 6 months to trial. I remember it was 250 sensors. Fast forward about 2 years ago, a startup came to us and said, like, we have those sticky tapes that are wirelessly communicating vibration data to, you know, a hub that you just need to plug in and configure. And you can go around and, you know, scan a barcode and stick those tapes on your rotating equipment. I can go to the plant, put my PPE on, and install hundreds a day, if not, you know, get to thousands, right? So that growth and then the reduction, the cost reduction in those IoT sensors made the problem exponentially difficult. So data is growing exponentially, yet we're tapping into less than a percent. That's a recent survey also. Less than a percent of that data. And it's due to those hurdles, lack of skills and of staff, and the size and the complexity of the data in manufacturing.
Okay. Before I'm going to ask you maybe to share a use case or two with us, I don't want to forget the technology. You refer to, not sure that they are main technology categories, but you're talking about machine learning, large language models, agents. Maybe there is another category but what can you share with us? You know, if we say large language models, are you working with a specific partner? Are you open source? You use a certain available open source solution and you have been changing it. How about the agentic AI? Are there specific, you know, solutions available? Machine learning, is it a specific machine learning? Again, specific partner. Is it all happening with a partner in the cloud? And how and where is the inference? And then maybe we get into or you can share it with combine it with a use case maybe.
Yeah, a number of great questions. So if your question is compound, so I'll try to break it down. And if I forget anything, just, you know, blame me. So the first one on the LLM. So the LLM is a component in our you know, platform. It accounts for probably 5% of the platform. And what we use is, so our platform, because by design, we, you know, we're offering air-gapped deployment to the extent that term is applicable. There are tons of arguments about it, but we're almost air-gapped deployment. We run behind customer firewalls, and they're either in their cloud, so in their private cloud network, or on-prem on their process network, right? So we are intentionally not calling any third-party APIs, right, outside the boundaries of the customer, right? So their data that cannot move, you know, outside their firewall, unless they demand that, which I have never met a customer that demands.
Which is never the case. Well, it's always the other way around. This sounds very European almost, I must say. You know, I always have felt for in the last 10 years, you know, somebody saying, as you just said, you know, my data is not going to leave the premises. I always felt that was very, well, you know, what they say about us, the Europeans, you know, we're so good at regulation and we're so careful with the data. But it's interesting, you know, assume, and I'm going to ask you that later, but being based in Ann Arbor, you say moving to Silicon Valley, that maybe your first customers are American customers, and that is what they are saying. Typically, you know, the data stays within the virtual, at least, premise.
Yes, it depends on the customer. So we're actually in highly regulated industries. We're like in the semiconductor. We have customers in the semiconductor industry. We're talking to, you know, customers in, you know, nuclear sector. We're talking to, you know, pharmaceuticals. So those are very, very protective by design. So they're not going to let, you know, an SOP reach ChatGPT with due respect to OpenAI, but they will be very reluctant and terrified to it. Right. So we, for that reason, all the LLMs we have are actually open source LLMs that we took and fine tuned, and really some of them we did, change them to a great deal. We have partnerships with Mistral, with Meta, actually with the technical teams to support those. But our LLMs are actually owned by Facilis at the end, and they're part of our platform, and we ship it integrated. So it's a containerized solution. You can run it wherever you want. And then we spec the hardware that it needs to run on. And, you know, people are very pleased with that. So we're intentional and we'll continue to do this. I don't think in the future we're going to change for one reason, also the LLM piece. So we use fine-tuned LLMs. We have over 15 of those that are domain-specific. We have a combustion, agent, we call it at the end. That is not available in any generic LLM outside, right?
Because when you say domain specific, that means that you have been training those that have been provided by the likes of Mistral, Meta, other ones, maybe, or probably, I assume, as open source. You have added, retrained, tuned, not sure what the right word is, but you have specifically provided them with then industrial, pharmaceutical, nuclear, whatever the markets, the specific subsegments are, with those kind of data that are in those categories?
Absolutely correct. That's exactly what we did. So this is how we can make them useful. And otherwise, I mean, they're going to be just speaking Wikipedia and public internet, which is useless for manufacturing. The other thing, Peter, that I wanted to emphasize is, why didn't we start from scratch and train our models and really burn some CPU, GPUs? Right. The reason is that we did not make that decision is that I don't need to teach a model to learn to speak English. If somebody has done it, I mean, that's fine. Cool. I'll build off of what they have. I'll take that model and teach it how to speak, you know, other technical domains. And I wouldn't worry about starting from scratch, because we got that that question, like, you know, I don't need to own LLMs. I mean, they're, as I said, 5 to 10% of my platform. I don't need to teach them the basics, and they're commoditized. I mean, at the end of the day, they're not really a differentiator. Everybody can get that, right? And the most critical thing, Peter, that I want to emphasize is, in order to get a multi-agentic architecture to really, really work effectively and solve a real-world problem like what we're tackling, which is not easy, it's very, very complex and complicated at the same time, is the engineering behind the scene. In our platform, it's not just Gen AI, and I want to emphasize this. And definitely, we're starting from a problem that we're trying to solve, which is manufacturing analytics. We're not driven by the hype or the technology, right? And we're trying to find a solution or a market fit for it. We started with a problem. In our platform, we call it hybrid internally in the company. We use explicit, good old days, software engineering practices, and we have explicit code. We have traditional AI, before it was commonly used, you know, named AI, machine learning and data science. And we have, you know, Gen AI, and all of them are working in harmony to complement each other. So we're getting the best of each and making them really effectively communicate and then deliver a solution that solves a problem. I don't care if an algorithm has made it to the headlines or not. As long as it really solves my problem that I care about, it will be in our platform. And we've developed a ton of those. So we're, right now, we have about 15 patent applications, and this number is growing over the past 2 years.
Sorry, how does your agentic AI kind of relate to what we are hearing, you know, since a couple of months, half a year maybe, is like this marrying of the traditional, good old-fashioned, symbolic, knowledge-based AI with the newer, you know, sub-symbolic machine learning. And always, the reason always is, you know, because our large language models have this potential to say weird things, which is actually in certain cases, of course, really is, because that's where the creativity comes from. But we can't use exactly that where it's not a feature in, as you just said, in pharma, in nuclear, or wherever. So I assume that still using the LLMs, that putting the agents, you know, behind it, that the agents make sure, as you were saying at the beginning, that whatever the result, the answer is going to be, is not going to be any hallucination.
Absolutely. A perfect question. So Peter, that's, so the way we implement, so, you know, the LLMs, you know, and you're absolutely right. I can't give a platform to somebody in manufacturing that asks it, give me temperature 3 at this plant, and then it throws a pressure tag instead at another plant or at the same plant. They're going to lose interest immediately. They're like, okay, good luck. Have fun.
Oh, the plant is going to blow up immediately. You don't want to have that happen.
Hopefully there's a human in the loop, at least until they're comfortable. But at the end of the day, yeah, you know very well that you lose credibility right away. So what we do is we lower temperature to 0 of the model, so it's the least creative. And we use the LLMs in two proven areas. It's good at summarizing text, so we know that. It's better, so it can actually give you a decent summary. And we're getting from the model memory. We're actually, grounding it in reality by using advanced RAG application, by accessing a corpus of knowledge bases. So it's really getting trusted data, and it's citing it for me, Peter. That's extremely important. I need to know where that is coming from. Even if so, we have surfing the internet option as well. You can turn, you know, the web search on, but you're going to see what is coming from the web if you want to have that option, and what is coming from trusted resources, but it's never left to the model to hallucinate and give an answer from the model memory. That's one way to do it. And if I can elaborate on an example, the Knox example that I mentioned earlier.
Please do, yeah. Please, I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure our listeners are interested as well. Like, if you giving as an example of, you know, how your solution is being used and where it's being used.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'll walk through a couple of use cases as well. So we'll just, you know, capitalize on the Knox example that we use, right? So in the schema, the grand scheme of multi-agentic architecture, how does that work, right? So if a user comes in and says, my Knox is, you know, 1100 ppm, and he's supposed to maintain it below 900, for example. He just says that. If he's an operator and he's calling that auto troubleshooter, what it would do is it will give him a recommended list of actions to take. And they're going to definitely start with, well, I'm going to look at your temperatures, your gas flow rates, your, you know, fuel to air gas ratios, so air to gas ratios, and, you know, a bunch of critical variables for NOx that it knows. But before it does that, it will actually consult with the agent that understands combustion. It will ask it what variables control NOx. It will get those variables, and then it will come back, search for those variables in the time series database, sees which variables, tags that are actually available, and it will recommend, okay, here's what I have, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start with, very simply, a correlation analysis, and then I will go deeper into root cause analysis, which is a stack of multiple algorithms in the back end that will run. And then every step, if the user approves that, you know, plan, then it will start executing, and it will give him the results. I will say, well, I believe I'm seeing high correlation with combustion air temperature, as well as temperature 4 and temperature 5 that are close to the flame. These are the ones that are highly correlated. And the root cause analysis is going to run, a stack of various algorithms, partial dependency, variable importance, and so on and so forth. And it will summarize all that and then passes to you and says, do you mind pulling thermal camera imaging inside the furnace? And it will. So if you have, and in this case, you have actually thermal cameras installed inside the furnace, it will actually get you those through another agent. And it will run computer vision on the images to characterize your flame and tell you, like, your peak temperature is this much. And then it will give you a bunch of characteristics and the type of flame, depending on however you actually decide is important in flame analytics, right? Everything is running for you, and you're seeing those sophisticated machine learning algorithms are being invoked by various algorithms. And then at the end, it will conclude with an optimization. It will tell you, if you were to keep your NOx below 900 ppm, I believe you need to keep, and it's not going to be, I believe, it will tell you data-driven. It will show you a dashboard for an optimization agent that will tell you these are the optimal ranges over the past 3 weeks, 3 months, whatever period that you're interested in. Here are the optimal ranges, right?
Right. Talking about the past gives this thing that I recognize. This sounds like, a person, a control engineer sitting in a control room who has been doing this for whatever, 30 or 40 years. He or she would, do exactly all these things that you just mentioned. It's just, and now we talked on, the domain expert, but, maybe a domain expert at a different knowledge level. Maybe the person just came from a training, maybe from university, depending on what it is that the people in the control room need to do. And maybe they don't have all this experience that the person that has been doing this for 40 years. Is that where we're talking this big difference of, that's person ABC? Maybe has a different salary, has had a different salary in the past because of the 40 years. And now there's the young person, and the young person now, or the new person typically, can now be doing similar things as the person who's been doing this for a long time.
Absolutely. So we actually say even those agents, even the subject matter expert agent, is giving you the insights of, Joe, who has 30 years of experience on the floor. Not to replace him, though, because you still have to have the human, but you're at least augmenting this guy who is a fresh grad with knowledge that he hasn't acquired yet, and at least as a guideline. So even if when he calls Joe in the middle of the night asking him to verify that, he's got some really good data-driven basis that he can convey to him. So the troubleshooting is super efficient. You can get to a solution or a decision in a matter of minutes, max hours, and you're, implementing it already, right? As opposed to, like, start from a blank piece of paper and then, call Joe to troubleshoot it for me, right?
Yeah, as I said, my presentation in Houston was towards autonomous. Now, I think we need to make an important division here. There's a couple of things here. Thing one, very important, is that all around the world, I believe in the United States, a similar to in Europe, at least, where I know, it's very difficult to find people these days. So since a year or two, many times when we talk about automation in general, it doesn't have to be AI, machine learning, agentic, etc. But many times it's now seen as an opportunity for us to be able to continue to produce, to manufacture. And that's one topic. But the other one is we need to look at how we're going to do that, right? So the specific thing you just mentioned here was the time series. You were mentioning a time series database, I believe. Is that one that you can share with us? It's a big topic that we've been following here, and people have always been telling us, Gen AI, large language models, but for us in, manufacturing, in process, we don't necessarily, or at least the scientists, the data scientists, haven't been concentrating on. Can you confirm, or do you say, no, well, you have your own solution, or there is a couple of solutions available on the market?
Actually, there are time series databases, a lot of vendors that, you know, are already in existence. And our platform can connect to any existing IoT platform in generally, right? Whether it's a time series database or a relational database, right? And it runs in memory. So when we actually pull data, it's in memory and real time being analyzed, and then you clear the memory, right? And I was saying you consult with the time series database, and definitely it's a major component of manufacturing, right? How to deal with massive amounts of data that are time series for to do, you know, all sorts of actions, optimization, anomaly detection, and so on and so forth, and process control, right? And there are a lot of, you know, of those solutions that you have time series, you have Influx database, you have TD Engine, I believe, the name of that, you know, time series. It's optimized for time series. And then you have the hyperscalers that are playing in the scale that are also catching up, like, you know, Snowflake is, and others, right, for manufacturing. So I think this space is pretty saturated. There are lots of players in it. And then for us, we have connectors. We're data source agnostic, I guess, if I can put that shameful insert here. We just connect to this, you know, wherever the data exists.
Very good. We're going to need to come to an end here. I didn't finish my thought before. It was about, does that mean, and it was just this morning that I read about, and yeah, I think it was the word autonomous. You know, that was my quote, two words, autonomous, were not there. And this was about a Chinese manufacturing of mobile phones. So a dark plant. Now, I think the other thing we need to differentiate here between discrete and process, you just gave a couple of examples of process, nuclear, pharma. But is it fair to say that with the solution we just talked about, also the new incoming domain expert is going to be able to do is going to be able to do more things or take a higher level of responsibility earlier, or in the end, where we do have problems finding enough people? You know, if the plant is normally being run with, you could say 1,000, maybe it's 100, doesn't matter, but we only find 50% of them. Will we be able to do the same thing or even more things with less people? That is one, right? And then we need to differentiate, you know, are we manufacturing mobile phones? Something goes wrong, shouldn't, but it's not a disaster. We don't want that to happen, as you said, in a nuclear plant or in a power plant, right?
Absolutely. So you're going to definitely, you know, we estimate our platform to save in just headcounts. You can get more done with less, absolutely. So we expect savings to be, you know, over $3 million. Because those talents that we talked about, like data engineers, data, you know, analytics in general, specialized talents, they're expensive. And they're not also process experts. At the end of the day, there will be friction between them and process experts all the time. So you're reducing that. And also for newer generations, you're building something that they are, you know, too long didn't read. So TLDR, right? This generation, Gen Z, they have that tendency of, you know, I need it to be conveniently at my fingertips. They're not going to read a manual. We have one use case where we have, you know, one of our, you know, customers, they gave us a library of defect reports they analyzed that they collected over 20 years. And there was a gentleman who is the experienced person who built that library, and he's going to retire, right, in a few years. You know, if you think about this, every time they have a problem at one of their plants, you know, 15 plus plants, they would go call him up and ask, you know, hey, we're seeing this. And then he would say, oh, okay, you know what? We have seen this 5 years ago, 10 years ago at this plant. And then he's going to pull this because it sits in SharePoint. It's tedious to search and it's not connected to real time manufacturing data. I mean, the time series data for that sake. All right. So we took that and then we turned it into an actual live agent and we connected it to, you know, real-time data that are collecting from their furnaces. And then every time they, you know, somebody asks a question and you get a variable that is getting out of control and that triggers a defect formation for them, it will actually comment that out and say, by the way, this is actually you running at the risk of, you know, forming this defect. Next shift, you might actually see it. Here is the resource. We got this from this report that was, you know, collected probably 5 years ago. And then you know, that's a completely, you know, I would say a new level of convenience, productivity that we've never seen before using these agents, if you allow me to say.
Closing, tell us a little bit more about your company, Facilis, is how you call yourself, based in Ann Arbor. You said moving to Silicon Valley. Tell us, you're looking for people. You tell us about, you say you're working with top tier manufacturers, concentrating on the United States at the moment. I don't know, question mark. Are you moving towards other parts of the world? Or
yes. So, well, our move to Silicon Valley is because most of those major manufacturers, they have digital transformation teams. They have some presence in Silicon Valley. So you get to enjoy meeting with them in person. So it's good. Even European and international and Japanese and whatnot. So we're global. We have actually, some of our early customers are actually European. And, you know, we have Japanese customers as well as US. So we're targeting the global market. We are right now, I mean, at a hyper-focused team of 8. And half of us are PhDs with over 15 years of experience after the PhD in manufacturing or deep learning and AI. So we're a diverse team in terms of expertise. And we're expanding. And right now we're working with, you know, 11 customers. We came out of stealth September 23. So over the past probably...
Yeah, it's still your first year. Yeah, right.
Yes. We got the honor of working with, you know, major manufacturing companies like Creatint, who we're partnering with Mitsubishi Electric. We're, working with NXP in the semiconductor, Mitsubishi Chemical, Henkel in Germany, OCP. And, the list goes on a bit. And we're discussing a partnership with Siemens Energy right now. And I guess one thing that I want to conclude with, Peter, if I really want to focus my team, that's my message to them. We should focus on a constant that's not going to change at least over the next 2 decades. And that constant in the market, in the space of manufacturing analytics, is no one is going to come to us and say, well, you know what? I need a solution that requires 10 more FTEs. To be dedicated or highly specialized data scientists and data engineers dedicated. They're going to ask for the opposite. I need something that helps me reduce headcounts, you know, get my team as productive as possible and requires less resources so I can scale it up, right? And the other thing is I need something that is almost plug and play. Nobody's going to come and ask us like, oh, I need something that requires an entire IT department to actually integrate it to me and scale it up. So those are the two constants that we're working around and we're focusing our efforts on. So we target by mid next year to have our platform, you know, almost plug and play. In a few minutes, you can configure the platform. It's up and running. You're in a matter of days, you can run POCs and scale up analytics solutions across your enterprise. And I spent a lot of time describing the ad hoc mode, troubleshooting mode, but there is real-time monitoring as well that any user without any previous experience can set up and configure very easily and build a dashboard and run, you know, models at whatever cadence they like. I would conclude with that.
Thank you very much, Yusuf. Sounds really impressive. Any listener, if you want to contact Yusuf, you best do that through LinkedIn. We'll put Yusuf's name in the notes. Otherwise, if you, the listeners, have any question, comment, you can always send me a short email, peter@aipod.de. Very happy that you stayed with us so far. Looking forward to have you with us again. And Yusuf, thank you very much for your time and your amazing information about your company and your solution.
And Peter, it's my absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.